Welcome to Wellness Radio with Dr. Jeanette Gallagher as your host. Her show discusses topics of health, wellness, and spirituality and is about discovering your place in this great universe from your cells to the cosmos. Along with her guest, in casual conversation, she strives to ask the difficult questions that may be holding you back from a vibrant life and shares new ideas that may inspire you to make a change in your life that you only can see in your dreams. And now, here is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Wellness Radio. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and it's a pleasure to have you with us here today. It is a great day. We're going to be talking about a book called Higher with Charles Hanna. It is Awaken to a More Fulfilling Life. Really interesting. Charles just said we did a show before, but as we all know in the spiritual world these days, I can't even remember that. So we're going to have a great show today because we can take this topic of awakening, spirituality, where is our life going? Let's talk about perception and how do we perceive our life? What about happiness, success? Where do these all fit in? If you all know, you get up in the morning because you're getting up, even I did this morning, the alarm went off. Your body gets shaken. You're not quite ready to want to wake up. Then you start doing your daily chores and you say, I have something planned. This, and this needs to happen to be able to get to this point. And when you get to that point, then you're on another path. And then something comes along and distorts and changes what you're doing for that day. And you say, well, my path for today has changed because I let something else in. You know, we look at it and we say, what exactly is the purpose of your day? How are you actually working through your day, and what are you allowing to come in, but are you letting it take you off of your path, or is it changing you, or is it taking you to your knees? Just recently here in the New Orleans area in southern Louisiana, we again had a lot of flooding. There are hundreds of thousands of homes. There are hundreds of thousands of people that don't have homes to go back to. Everything except the clothes on their back, their cars, their jobs, their grocery store, their churches, their gas stations, their communities, and their schools are all flooded. How would you deal with that? What would you do with yourself about that? Is that something that will take you to your knees? You know, we all look at people that are homeless on the street, and we always feel that sense of, oh, if I could do for them, they need better. I expect them to have better. We want to put them in homes. We want to give them money. We want to give them jobs because we believe they need something better. Have you ever sat down and talked to some of those people? I can remember I went to McDonald's and I wanted to buy a breakfast for a person that was sitting there with all of his things on his seat next to him. And he said, you know, I have a little money. And I said, you know, no worries. Come on up. Let's go buy some food. So we went up. We bought him breakfast. And I sat down next to him and he could not stop talking. Do you know I did not hear a word from him that he was talking about? What I noticed, his eyes were as clear as a bell. They were as blue as the ocean. They were not red. They were not worn out. He was so alert. He was right on the money. And all I could do was just connect with that person. So really, it's all about what are you connecting within your universe, what's important, and how do you perceive your day and how you go through it. So are you the center of the universe, or is the universe, are you just reacting to everything? Charles, thank you so much for joining us today. It's such a pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
You know, Charles, don't you think that the world has really changed quite a bit? And even in my few examples, I see it day to day.
Yeah, the world is changing very rapidly, and it never used to be like that. This is only a phenomenon that's been happening recently in history, and it's accelerating because of the number of people and the technology and the travel and news and so on. So us as humans, we're dealing with change, and we're dealing with the information of that change at such a rapid rate than ever before that it really does create a different challenge than what we are used to and what we are built for as human beings on this planet.
You know, I had a show the other day, and we were speaking about the Internet. And if you look back on, I grew up in the 50s and 60s, if you wanted to know something, you would have to go to the library and read it because your parents generally probably didn't know it. So you would go and read books at the local library. And when you went into the local library, if you needed a bigger book, you had to go to the bigger library because they would have more extensive books. Then along comes the internet, and you go, holy smokes. You know, look at all this information. And I think as humans, I'm not sure if we had a time to resonate and catch up. We were kind of just thrown into the thrust of it, don't you think?
Yes, and the information can also be quite confusing. I mean, I have my 12-year-old daughter, and she comes to me constantly with these new facts and little tidbits of information. And some of it is fascinating, and some of it I know is completely wrong. But she takes it as gospel because she's reading it on the internet. And we get sometimes into this argument as, you know, where did you get the information from? Well, it's true that it's on the internet. I said, no, you have to be aware when you're hearing this. So it can be also an overflow of information that can sometimes also be misleading.
You know, and I think so, too, with the internet, we come about, let's talk about the idea of spirituality. I mean, so many people, they've had religions. They were dogma. You went to church. You know, I can remember, I'm a Roman Catholic, the church, I used to play the organ in church. The priest always had his back to you. The mass was said in Latin. I used to sing the mass with him in Latin. And all of a sudden, when the church, priest turned around and they added a guitar, I'm going, what the heck? This isn't church, you know? This is not my religion. This is not what I signed up for. Why are you doing this? And I kind of took it as an affront in that, you know, the world was expanding. They wanted, didn't want religion to be a mystery. They wanted it to be more people-friendly. That's what they were saying at the time. Yet, we look at it and we say, is change good? And how does religion and spirituality evolve? Or, you know, how about the concept of this? Does it really evolve, or are we just awakening to its, the facts of spirituality?
It's a very interesting topic because I grew up in a very religious family as well. And even though I was born in Egypt, I was born into a Christian family. My father was Orthodox. My mother is Catholic. Everybody in Egypt was very religious. It didn't matter what religion you were. Of course, most of the Jewish people were left the country in the 60s. So it was basically Christians and Muslims. And at that time, it didn't matter what religion you were, so long as you believed in God. And mm-hmm. I did. And, you know, you had to believe in it totally. And I was actually an altar boy, and I served at the church, and I would get paid like 5 piastres at the time for weddings and funerals and so on. When I came to Canada at the age of 16, and I started to find religion being practiced a bit differently here. Things that were sacrilege there are not here, and vice versa. Mm-hmm. And then when I started to look even deeper, I found that religion was practiced differently 50 years ago, 100 years ago versus today. Things that were allowed and now not allowed and so on. And all of a sudden I said, but I thought everything I learned was the word of God. How could that change? Mm-hmm. How could that change with the times? If it's changing with the times, then it's not the word of God. Perhaps it's the word of man. And then all of a sudden, I started to pick holes in it. Well, this does not make sense to me, and that does not make sense to me. And you add into that my scientific teachings and all the other things that kind of give you confusing information, and I lost it. Mm-hmm. Now, here's the thing that's really sad about religion. Religion provides something that is really important and fundamental for humanity from the beginning of time. And people always wanted to ask, what is the meaning of life? And, you know, is there a God? And so on. But when you come and get caught up in these technicalities and this does not make sense and this does not make sense, what happened is, in my case, I kind of threw out the baby with the bathwater. I threw out the concept of my religion, but I didn't realize I was also throwing my concept of God, which was something very different and independent of what your religion is. You know, God does not change based on your religion or your faction of religion. God is everlasting. It's magnificent. It's beautiful. It's large. But I lost contact with it, and it hurt me a lot in my life. And because of my experience in life, which got me to a near-death experience, I would never have reconsidered that again in my life. And when I started to reconnect, I ended up connecting with God and finding it. It's a very beautiful thing to connect to, something very essential if you really want to have serenity in your life and so on. And we can discuss the reason why. But most people never do. They end up with their ideas about it, and they never get a chance to really think about it deeper and find out what does it really mean to them and how it does affect their life.
I think we use I'll use the Catholic religion as an example. You know, the church would start saying, well, you can't do this in modern life. You can't do that in modern life. And they would start categorizing all of these things that we get involved in and start come to, like, birth control and different things like that. And it would start to come to light, well, God says this, well, God said that. Well, God didn't have birth control this type in that time. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So the concept or the idea of they kind of people felt that the church was overreaching. And if you look at the words, the church is overreaching, but that didn't mean that God was overreaching. So it's a perfect example of what you're just saying. The church, the priests, the power that be on earth, are they the same thing or, in fact, similar to the God that we believe in? And, you know, a lot of times we have to say, is there a difference? What you need? Can you find your way through the forest to be able to come to your belief of how did we get here in the first place? What is our purpose in this life? And, you know, we can't just believe that we were just deposited here to just perform day-to-day things, accumulate all of this material stuff, and have a lot of names on our tombstone, right?
Yeah. Exactly. And when you think about the various religions, I mean, I was looking at the Wikipedia, and I couldn't believe there's, like, I don't know, 45,000 different variations of Christianity. And then you have all these different sects within each religion, and even Islam, when you look at the Middle Eastern world and how even within one sect of Islam versus another one, there's enough of a difference that they kill each other on mass and ethnic cleansing. What I find about God and my concept of God today is that God is so much bigger than we can ever understand. It's so much reaching the entire universe, far beyond us. We cannot really comprehend it. I have given up trying to comprehend it. And I know people that have spent their entire life that I would have to bow to the knowledge and experience and having thought about theology and God and so on. But even them cannot really comprehend what it's all about. And I find that the more you try to define God through religion, that's when we get into trouble. And that's when we become very fixated on our opinion of this versus that opinion of that. Even myself, even within our religion, when I see my aunt and my mom talk about God, they both have a different interpretation, even though they are in exactly the same religion, very believing, and the same church and the same teachings and everything. So this is something very individual to us, and it's a shame sometimes when all of these prescriptions and people telling us, you know, what is right and what is wrong, it makes us, you know, it changes our world. We try to define it and put it in a box. And sadly enough, it causes a lot of, you know, wars and misunderstanding between people and prejudices and separations and so on. But when I had to look at God myself from behind the curtain, let's say, if I could say that, and I started to think, why am I here? You know, why am I on this planet? And I mentioned in my book, for example, that I know I buy my car, for example. I work for it and I buy it. You go for breakfast, you pay for it. You work for that money and then you have to pay for it. If you buy a house, you have to pay a lot more money for it. What did I buy for my life? What did I pay for my life? Did I buy it? Was I at one point saying, you know what, I'd like to have this life of a man, you know, on earth at this time, and I want to have these people around me, and I want to have these qualities, and I want to have this lifespan, and so on. And then end up paying for that. I never did that. I just happened to be. And I realize it's not mine. I've almost kind of like been entrusted with this life. But whatever gave me this life must be a loving force. Because I love my life. I love being alive. And I have a lot of people in my life that I love. And there are a lot of things that I can think of that are beautiful and so on. A lot of challenges as well. But if all that beauty and everything that I could ever imagine that I would want that can be beautiful just came to me, why can't I believe that there's something very good behind it and something much bigger than I can realize? And it behooves me not to plug into it. Because if I don't, then I'm on my own. It's like a soldier in an army. And a soldier cannot go into Afghanistan and say, you know, I am really strong. I don't need anybody. I don't need a GPS and I don't need central command. And I don't need to be plugged into what everybody else is doing. I'm going to do it on my own. Imagine how that soldier would be lost or probably be killed in a very short order. So a lot of times we think, you know, our ego is too big. We don't need, even people that don't believe in religion, I don't need a God. You may need a God, but I don't need it. I know what to do for myself. But we fail to realize that if we plug into that, we are so empowered. It's not actually weakened. We are empowered greatly in having a connection and a direction and a kind of a belief in the sense that you are part of something much bigger. And you don't have to worry as much as you do, that everything is on your shoulder and you have to control it. and you're going to be the final determinant as to what, how your life is going to turn out. Life is going to turn out the way it turns out. So I developed a concept and a belief in God after that. And as I grew in my belief in it, by definition, it was not contradicted to anything in terms of my logic or my science or my scientific and so on. It actually, my concept of God, I find, is perfectly conforming with science and everything else that most people say, well, you know, if you believe in science, you cannot believe in God. It's not true. In fact, it's even overwhelmingly so that that science, you know, expands your knowledge of what God could possibly be and how big he could be.
You know, I think sometimes we tend to control our lives or feel we are in control of our lives, which is our perception of what life is all about. And then something happens like cancer or an accident or a divorce or a quick death or whatever. And people will say, my God, why have you forsaken me? Do you know what I mean? In other words,
yeah.
Why did you do this to me? Why is this happening? And they're constantly asking why? And sometimes they say, well, I'm not getting answers, and then they start feeling lost. Well, maybe they were so disconnected sometimes so along the path that the answers were there. They just don't understand the answers, or they aren't listening to the answers, or they aren't trusting what the answer could be or is.
Yeah, because they're looking at it from their perspective. So they're expecting a different kind of outcome based on their perception of reality. You're expecting a specific kind of answer. So when something comes that doesn't jive with that, you say, I got abandoned, this does not make sense to me. But it's actually the foundation, everything from the beginning that was not right. We have something called an ego. And that ego has been there because it's essential for us to survive. If you're running with a flock of birds or animals, every one of them has to protect themselves if something comes to tries to eat them. They have to make sure they can breathe and eat, so they have the hunger and stuff like that. And they also need to protect themselves. What happened in our case is we developed this brain that is very capable, that allows us to better survive. But we end up in this pocket of humanity where we don't need to fight for our life. We don't need to run away from animals. We don't need on a day-by-day basis to figure out where we're going to get our next. I mean, unfortunately, some people do in the world, but most of us in the Western world don't do that. And we have this extra capacity, and we get fooled into thinking that we can control our life. Not only can we control our life on the long term, but we need to enhance it. And we overreach our ability to understand, and we overreach the intent of our brain in the first place. So I think when we do that, we start, you know, thinking this is how life should be, and we start defining anything and moving with that. And then all of a sudden something like that happens, like cancer and so on, and it is a quick, fresh, rapid, stark reminder that, no, you do not have control. You do not know what's going to happen. And it confuses us because we did not expect it. We've been like dreaming along thinking that we have a plan and that's how it's going to work out. And that's where the really fundamental problem is. If, on the other hand, as I talked about, you plug into this higher being and you believe in that in a sense that is really to your core, then you understand and you have a faith that no matter what happens, it's okay. There's a bigger plan to it. So when something like that happens, you don't get shaken because, you know, this is not part of my plan. This is not part of my understanding. Mm-hmm. You instead realize that this is beyond my understanding, but whatever it is, I trust it. I have faith that in the end everything will be fine no matter what happens. Even in the case of death, it doesn't matter. I know that I am part of something bigger. And all I have to do right now is do the best that I can be. Take care of myself and be loving and do the next right thing and have faith that everything will turn out all right. That's the great power that you have when you get connected to that. And I believe that people need it today more than ever because many people today are not religious. Many are not. And those that aren't, and I got through that stage of extreme, even atheism at one point, I lost out. As I said, I lost out because I threw the baby out with the bathwater and I became disconnected and I became stressed. And for a long time in my life, I felt very powerful and successful and I could do things on my own. So I felt fine, I don't need anybody. But guess what? Things happen, life happens, and then all of a sudden you get broken. And in my case, I was lucky, I survived it, and I come out the other end. And that's the story I'm telling in my book, how when I came on the other end, I found that there's something really empowering, much more empowering than I am, no matter how smart I am or successful or capable I am. There's something so much bigger you can plug into. And you don't have to waste all your energy trying to fix and control things. You could actually spend that entire energy just living and enjoying the thing that has been given to you freely. which is life.
And also you talk about addiction in the book and about how you felt that it had taken it, you know, life had really brought you to a stop and to your knees. I think sometimes so many people avoid that and keep running from that, and then they say, I'm not going to be taken down, and then they'll find another addiction or another path, or they will find something else to hang their hat on. And what they're really running from is the truth of their soul or their spirit of who they are and exactly how they're connected in the universe. And sometimes that fear keeps them so driven. It's really that, you know, something is powerful out there, and you say, I don't know what it is. It's scaring me. I don't know what it's all about. I'm going to keep running my way. And they feel disconnected. So in other words, they are just living their life, and they have control. Everything is working. You know, I go to my job. Everything is perfect. And, you know, we see a lot of addictions these days. And I'll tell you, probably if you had 100 people in the room, you could probably have 99 of them that are having some concerns or issues, because we all want to be able to say, you know, I'm afraid of that, or that scares me. I don't know what that is, or I need something to bring me in another space because I'm afraid of the space I'm in. You know, a lot of times we say being spiritual and being with God and having a great life and being happy and everything, we say that that's devoid or free of pain. It's free of sickness or illness. It's free of divorce or death. And that's not really true. All of those things are still going to happen. It's just how you perceive them, as you said in your book with perception disorder. It's how you perceive them. If someone has cancer, you could take 1,000 people and get 1,000 different ways on how they are going to deal with it, handle with it, go through that process. But sometimes, you know, those that would say, you know, when they pray, then they say that they want God to heal them. What does healing mean? And then they get all ticked off when, you know, after the surgery and after the chemo and the radiation, they aren't, quote, healed. And what does healed mean? It means, oh, well, I want to be how I was 10 years ago. Don't you see the picture? And I'm not. And they get very angry. So we end up with a lot of angry people, you know, walking around, or people who are in fear of it coming back, those ideas. And I think you can almost take that same scenario and relate it to anything in your life, don't you think?
I agree, and I think when you touch about addiction, for example, there's a lot of things that we are learning about it more and more, and me having been part of it, and I almost died from it 28 years ago, and I was very lucky that I survived it. I've had firsthand knowledge as to what's that all about. And what I write about in the book is there's something called this perception disorder, and this perception disorder ties to what we were talking about earlier, which is we look at life from our perspective. We are the center of the universe. Is this good for me? Is that not good for me? This is my opinion of what's right or wrong. This is how I plan my life. This is what fair is. This is what right is. This is how things should be unfolding. And we don't realize that this is all our perspective from our point of view, which is, number one, very limited because it's from one point of view.
Right.
Second, it's limited by our understanding. We cannot project 1,000 years from now or across
right.
the space and so on as to how it all ties in together. So our perspective is going to be skewed no matter what. And then it becomes extra challenged when through our childhood we develop certain prejudices and fears as a result of what happened to us. We are not perhaps nurtured, or we're not given an opportunity to connect with life. So we end up, you know, afraid of certain things or having bad experiences of certain things, and we try to start controlling our environment to not do this and not do that. And as we do that, we shape our own prejudices. We all have it. The extent to we have it, it changes our perspective from what life really is on its own. And people have it to various extents. Those on the extreme end, which I call in the addiction kind of zone, are people that are very determined, very afraid. They are very controlling because they really hate a certain things, how it feels. They really hate a certain
right.
outcome. They are determined not to have this. And by that, they really are out there to control the environment very strongly. And the stronger they are and stronger their willpower, the more they are successful initially and on the face of it. And sometimes they're lucky for the long run. But when something bad happens in their life, such as in my case, my willpower and determination made me fight it to the maximum. After all, I built corporations and I did this and I did that. I will not succumb to this. This will not bring me down. And it is my strength and will and power that almost killed me. It is actually my strength that killed me in that case. People said, I can't believe you don't have the willpower. And I said, it's not about willpower. When I couldn't stop, and after I stopped, it was not because of willpower or strength or understanding what's right or wrong. It is something completely different. Now, people that don't have the addictions still can suffer from perception disorder, but you don't see it in the form of addiction. You see it, well, in the extreme case, you see it going to other things. It could be like workaholics, or they could overeating, or it could be gambling. They talk about sexual addictions. They talk about codependencies. They talk about many various things in terms of compulsive behavior, cleanliness, and so on. And then as you get less extreme, you find people that may not have any of these issues, but they're simply bitter. They hate life. They're isolating. They don't have friends. They don't believe in anything. They've given up hope. They just want to be left alone. They go out and live by themselves and so on. And as you go into less extremes, you see people that are kind of in society and functioning, but ask themselves, what's the meaning of it all? It cannot be just about this. There's no, like, joy inside and excitement. They don't get up in the morning and hear the birds and say, oh, my God, look at this. Let's go out and do this today and so on. They don't have that excitement. So it affects people in various ways. And when you live it, you don't realize it. You can't see past it. And sometimes something bad has to happen in your life to take you out of your frame of reference and see that perhaps you can look at life in a different way. And that's what I'm hoping to do in this book, to show why you would want to do that and how much more beautiful life really is. Whereas most people think, as I did, even in my darkest moments, that the last thing I could give up on is my clinginess to life, that I could not trust anybody. Everything has been so hard, and the last thing I could do, and the only thing that I could trust is my own mind. And it was my mind that was getting me into trouble. It was the way I was thinking. So it's a very tough thing to do. But, you know, that's the beauty of challenges in our life. Sometimes some of the most horrific things that can happen in our life can be the doors to greatest blessings. And if you were connected to a higher power, you would at least realize and have the faith in that and maneuver through it in a completely different manner.
You know, I really think it's about expanding the consciousness of the human person. Because if we look back at history, there's a lot of philosophers in the past, but they were very few and far between, and they would speak. And, you know, we still reference them. You see them on Facebook and social media, people tagging, you know, a phrase, and they'll have the person's name there. And then they kind of, you know, people hang their hat on that. But really, people... even in the early 1900s, they would never be able to have this conversation. They could never conceptualize what we're talking about. So even so, people's consciousness has grown. Their resistance to new ideas, their resistance to the world around them or to opening up and learning more. I think we may say that we feel like we're smarter these days or that we're more conscious, awake, and aware, more spiritually grown. And I think sometimes the words get in the way and they really don't live like that. They're just putting those words out there because they want to go with the flow, their peers or their peeps around them, you know, they have to keep up with the Joneses. And really in their mind and in the way they live in their hearts is different. And that, I think, in your heart and in your body and in your mind is when you will hit the wall eventually, just as you had done, and you know, we all have. And when you hit that wall, it's the magic is getting up. The magic is you know, where you go from there. You know, I saw something the other day. They always talk about, you know, like, well, I'll use my point of reference of recent was the floods here. And everybody says, oh, well, the flood's over, so everything's, quote, back to normal. And actually, you know, we learned from Hurricane Katrina is that the flood is the beginning of the story. Everything your frame of reference will be since Katrina. Everything of reference is what happened since. You know, it was almost whatever existed before doesn't exist anymore. It's what's since then. And so when you have, like, really breakdown and really core that you're just settling into, you also, too, have that same frame of reference. Whatever happened before that, you're really going to think about what happened since. The story just begins then, you know, when you come to a realization or you come to a stepping stone. That's your story going forward.
Yeah. When you talked about the fact that we know so much more than people did maybe 100 years ago and more,
yeah,
and our consciousness is expanding, it's true, you know, but it's a double-edged sword. And a lot of times in the olden times, when people did not have to and cannot control their environment, cannot go to school for 10 years and then travel to New York and expand their career and so on, they were very limited in what they can do. Every day looked the same. They did what their parents did, what their grandfather did, and so on. It was a very predictable environment. And in fact, that's how we were built over many, many years on Earth. So even though they did not have expanded consciousness, in some ways they were far more spiritual than us because they actually were able to live in the moment. They were not worried about what's going to happen next year because they know what's going to happen next year. It's what happened yesterday. And
they didn't have
tomorrow.
The Internet. Yeah, they didn't have the Internet telling them, giving them predictions or sitting up there arguing about all the concepts so that they could formulate your path, you know?
Yeah, or somebody or the village next door just got massacred by such and such. They're not even aware of
right.
it. They're not living in fear that it's going to happen to
yeah.
them and so on. They just go on, and they actually end up being more spiritual than a lot of us are able to do it because
mm-hmm.
of all this information that we have to process. So sometimes they say a little knowledge is dangerous, and definitely when it comes to spirituality and expanded knowledge, we're in a very dangerous stage. And it's no wonder that a lot of people are quite anxious. We are very anxious as a species, but because we are all anxious, we think it's normal. But in fact, anything that we can do to bring down that anxiety is going to be very healthy for us. We'll bring down the diseases, will make us more fulfilled in life, and so on. And that's just the comfort of making your life a little bit more predictable.
But what about the concept, too, of, like, let's say there were earthquakes in Italy the other day, and everybody says, yeah, okay, cool, you know, I saw it on Twitter. And they don't think anything of it. But yet, really, our existence on this earth is dependent upon each other. The earth is not a solid mass of whatever. It is a living, breathing organism, too. So if we think about that, and then the earth is in the universe. So everything really does matter.
Yeah.
Get into the whole world about what matters, but
yeah.
we are all in the web of life, more or less. So that's
but
really
you,
about a higher concept.
Yeah. If you were to get involved in every situation that happens across the earth,
yeah.
you would go insane. You don't have the capacity to really understand, comprehend, and digest everything that's going around. We were never meant to be like that. We were never meant to process everything like that. Now, you can take a situation like what's happened in Italy or anywhere else and take two approaches to it. Oh, my God, this could happen to me. Or, this is not me. I don't care. I'm going to be totally oblivious to it. And or, you know, I am so grateful for what I have that this has not happened to me, that I'm going to appreciate my life a little more. I'm going to hug my children more. I'm going to say hi to my neighbor. I'm going to appreciate and value
right.
my life more. There are many different ways you can come out of it. This all depends on your frame of reference. So no matter what happens in your life, as you said earlier, no matter whether you believe in God, you don't believe in God, whether you have a good life, you don't have a good life, whether you have spirituality or not, whether you're well-grounded or not, none of that is going to change what's going to happen in your life. Challenges are going to come. It only helps on how you deal with it. And the more you are capable in dealing with challenges, the more, for example, spiritual you are, the more grounded, the more religious, the more fundamentally strong you are, the bigger the challenges are going to be. Because the little challenges are not going to bother you. You're not going to even think of them as challenges because you work through them, because you are capable of working through them. It's the big ones that are going to stop you. And you're going to ask yourself, why is this happening to me? I
mm-hmm.
felt I'm spiritual. I believe in you, God. I did this and I did that. Why is this? Because that's life.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at it from the perspective that it's a bad thing, that's your problem right there. It's the fact
right.
that you think of it as being bad, not what really happened to you. This is actually just a bigger lesson that we need to go through as we go through this life and whatever else other existence that we're not aware of. And,
yeah,
and when you look at this, sorry.
Go ahead.
Any challenge that can happen, there's a lot of beautiful things that can come out of it, no matter how horrible it might be. So I talk in my book about, you know, why do we embrace challenges? But one of the things I talk about is think about what could happen that's positive out of it. If it's from the flooding, for example, or Katrina and so on,
mm-hmm.
as much as the devastation, the horrible thing, what could possibly be positive about it? And sometimes when you're in that situation, it's very hard to imagine, but no matter what, there's always a positive twist. For example, you could develop a bond with your neighbors that you save. You could develop a greater, you know, realization of what your life is all about and what your priorities are. You could end up being seen as somebody that people can rely on. There are some things that can be very fundamental and powerful and lifelong changing that can result from any adversity. If, therefore, you get connected to that, you deal with the situation at the time as best you can, but if you now focus on that incident or that calamity that happened in that positive sense and you invest yourself in it, you will end up in a place invariably afterwards where you have gained something so powerful directly as a result of this very negative experience that happened. And forever you will look at your life that this bad thing that happened in your life was what got you to somewhere better. So that's what being grounded is all about, is how you deal with these things. It's not changing them or avoiding them or making them better, because life is going to continue, and you're going to continue to have bigger challenges as you grow in yourself as a creature on this earth.
Yeah, I think the concept that we can't stop disease, we can't stop destruction of the earth, we can't stop change of the earth or the human being or the human body. Just accept it and say, as you said, this is life. And that is very, I think, probably the most powerful words we've spoken today. This is life. It's all about how you act, how you perceive it, how you go forth with it, how you think about it, and how you value what's important, don't you think?
Yes, I saw this little cartoon thing that was really cute in one of my daughter's younger books, and it was about Winnie the Pooh, and he was walking next to Rabbit, and and I think Rabbit told Winnie the Pooh, he says, you know, one day we are all going to die.
Mm-hmm.
And Winnie the Pooh said, yes, but not today.
Right.
And that's what life is. It's about today. You know, we can lose all of these things, but think of what you have today. And you may have lost many things, but look what you have not lost. So I think the meaning of life is that you look and consume and involve yourself and immerse yourself in the things that you do have that are beautiful. And the perspective is important to be able to realize what is beautiful in front of me. Some people have children, have families, and they're not happy, and they don't realize that they already have the greatest gifts on earth. But because the mind is somewhere else and the perception is thwarted, they don't value it because they're fixated on getting something that they're not getting, and they end up being bitter and consumed by it, trying to change, trying to control, trying to stop the disease, trying to do this, trying to do that, and they've missed what this particular moment is about.
Let's share a little few steps, Charles, in your book about, I mean, it's really about paying attention, having a few routines about being aware and being grateful. I'll tell you, I don't even think people know what grateful means anymore. And they're saying, well, I know one particular person, they would always say, well, what do I have to be grateful for? My day is holy hell. I live it every day. I do the same thing.
Yeah.
Or another person would say, what do I have to be grateful for? Nobody ever did anything for me. I did it all for myself, you know. So let's talk about, you know, those three concepts of listening, gratefulness, and, you know, routine. Well, and fourth, awareness, because that's really the keys to living life forward.
Yeah, you cannot be grateful if you're bitter. You cannot be grateful if you're hungry. You cannot be grateful if you're dying. You cannot be, it's hard. It's hard to be, you know, grateful when you have not lived your life and you're not in a state of mind that's conducive to that. And we talked a bit about these motivational speakers, and when you talked about, you know, this greater awareness, and people, you know, have awareness of things and make these quotes from philosophers in life that are really nice, and they quote them, but they don't live by them. We all want those things. We may sometimes see people put a statement out and they believe in it. They know it makes sense. They know it would be nice, but they don't live it. They
right.
can't, you know, and so, and that's what I think also about a lot of these motivational speakers. You listen to them and you are inspired by them, and then right back to life you go. And it's
right.
like building sandcastles, you know, they look very pretty, beautiful. I really would love to have that one. The next wave comes in and it's washed right out. You have to change fundamentally basic things that you do in life. And they're very simple things. And I talk about them in the book, and maybe you're asking me as to what some of those steps are. But when you do them in very simple ways, they start changing your perspective slowly, slowly. And then all of a sudden, you start finding things are working out differently. You start finding yourself a lot more inspired about things and a lot more free. And as you free your mind from all these worries and anxieties, you start paying more attention to the things that are actually in your life. And the funny thing is, you know, like when you start, like for example, if you stopped and looked at a flower or you looked at a little colony of ants and you had the afternoon, you had nothing better to do, you will find so much magic there that otherwise you would have walked right by and completely missed it even exists. And likewise with our life, when we are not consumed with these angers and fear and so on, and we start paying attention to the things that we otherwise think as are mundane and boring and stuff, in fact, we find so much magic in the simple things that we start
right.
developing a taste for them, a love for them, an appreciation for them, and become very happy to live in that. So it's all about freeing the mind to be able to appreciate the basic things in life. And when somebody says, what am I going to be grateful for? It's because they don't see. what they need to be grateful for.
Right.
Now, what are the basic steps? It's very simple to me, and I'm a very logical person. I consider myself, you know, spirituality is very important in my life, but I've always been a scientist, and it has to make sense, basic sense to me. And it starts to me from the fact that, number one, this is not my life. I've been entrusted with this life. I've been gifted for this life. So therefore, number one, I have a responsibility to take care of myself. If I do that and nothing else but that, everything will be fine. That's all I need to do. I don't have to have these major goals and this and that. So how to take care of yourself? It's simple. We all know how to take care of ourselves, but we don't do it. For example, if you have a child and you love the child, you're going to make sure that they eat well, that they sleep well, that they're clean, that they're protected, that they have good schooling, that they have good interaction with other people, and all of these things. But how many times do we really protect ourselves and make sure that we have a good sleep, that we eat the right thing? Do we go out and use, for example, take advantage of the knowledge on the internet as to what a good diet is and how to eat properly or where to get this and so on? We need to invest the time. If you, in fact, did nothing in your life but looked after yourself, it would be a full-time job that you cannot even do in a full-time day. And when you do that and you find yourself in a physically, because how you take yourself is physically, number one. That's even more important than spiritually, which is resting well, eating well, and nutrition, and being active. Active, you got to be moving around and so on to get your blood going and muscles going, because we are built on the basis of being active and checking yourself out and so on. But then the next thing is to do the same thing with your mind. There's spirituality, to be able to connect with people and talk to a lot of people so that you have a different perspective on things. Because when we don't talk to people, that's when we stay alone and become fearful and resentful, and we feel alone and isolated, and we are different from everybody else, and we, you know, bad things are going to happen. When you start talking to people, you realize we're all in this together, and there's so much more to share. And if we're having a meal together by laughing, that's more important than anything else. So connection with people, spirituality, connection with a higher power, a faith in life, and so on, and you start becoming healthy on a mental level and so on, all of a sudden, you know what? Everything else works out. Everything works out. You start enjoying life to the maximum, and if it ends one day, sometime sooner than later, it doesn't matter. You have to believe in your heart that you didn't come out of nowhere, and you're not going to nowhere. Mm-hmm. But what it is, don't consume yourself by trying to define it, and what you have to do today to make sure that's going to be good the next time. You know, you didn't have to do anything last time to be here. So, you know, you live at the moment, and that's what the gift that has been given to you. And don't rob yourself. Don't rob yourself by being consumed elsewhere. And so I one time saw a psychiatrist when I was at my depths, and he said, you know, Charles, you remind me of a stick man. You're so intellectual, and you have this big head on a stick man, and you keep falling over yourself. He said, life is very simple. You just can't get it. And that's what I've learned. Life is very simple, and we overcomplicate it because we want to use the maximum of our knowledge and intelligence to figure it out, because we feel that's going to be our edge to be happy. It isn't.
Yeah, I think everybody looks for that little pie in the sky, and they feel that life, you know, you have to keep questing towards it. You're always questing towards something in life, when you have to be just more in the moment and more present and enjoy the life that's around you. Because sometimes, you know, you can keep going down the street, you know, and following your map, your GPS, but you don't even notice what's around you in the car, you know? You don't even notice the cities that are around you. You don't enjoy the journey or the trip. And when you get there, you say, but I never saw that before. You know, and it's just such a life with blinders, as we would call it.
And that's the thing that I was referring to earlier. When we have so much information, it can actually be a double-edged sword. One of the disadvantages, one of the great dangers of seeing so much, is that society today preys on our perception disorder. It preys on it. For example, what it says, it shows you people that are very successful, very famous, very rich. Oh, they did a quick scheme and they made $100 million. What have you done today? Mm-hmm. And then it's all packaged and it's all photoshopped and it's all put together, and there's so many of them. And the more we see people that are talented and powerful in this and Olympics and so on, the more you look at yourself and say, how do I measure up? You know, like, I need to have a piece of that. Why don't I have? I deserve that. So either people become sometimes very angry, or they become fixated to do that. So society kind of preys on this perception disorder that we need things outside of ourselves to make us happy. And that's part of the disadvantage of having so much information, that we are not mature enough spiritually to be able to deal with.
You know, and in closing, let's talk for a little bit about success. Because is success living in the moment? Is success how many letters you have after your name? Or, you know, is success everybody's going to come to your funeral, you know? And that's quite a different concept that many people have these days, don't you think?
Yes. I mean, I wrote at the bottom of the book, and I said, you know, I happen to be one of these people that was very successful. I was fortunate enough that I, you know, had good education, had a good career. I made a lot of money. And I still, you know, and even though I fell down, almost lost everything, I came back a lot more. And I think to myself, is that really the happiness for me? When I look back at my life, if I had lived my life without having to chase those things, would I have had a better life? And the question became, well, what is the meaning of success? Is it money? Mm-hmm. Is it power? Is it recognition? Is it the names, as you said, and so on? And some people would say, no, it's all about happiness. And some others would say, oh, you're just saying that to make yourself feel better about it.
Right, right.
But when I look at my life and I ask myself, how would it have been had I lived my life in a more spiritual way? If I had been taking better care of myself, if I had been respectful of myself, if I had been loving and nurturing for myself, I can't imagine that I would have been less intelligent. I can't imagine that I would have been less visionary. I can't imagine that I would have been less attractive or connecting with other people. All of these things would have been better. And I gotta believe that I would have been able to recognize so many great opportunities to connect with people and do things that otherwise have gone completely past me without noticing it because I was so fixated on my goals. I may not have gotten into drugs the way I did. I may have found other ways to deal with it and maybe meet people and do things that I could have never imagined in my life. So it's very hard to imagine it, but today I feel success is waking up in the morning and you're as healthy as you can be and you just love and excited about what this day is going to turn for you and you realize that anything can happen today. And what could possibly be more exciting than that? We hear all these stories about people making money and so on so that they can go back to the beach and do exactly that.
It takes people's spirit away, too. You know, sometimes they say that success is that which is defined for me, and then they live a life of judgment, you know, in comparison. And that's kind of a difficult path to be on.
Well, if you judge other people, you're going to be judging yourself. And once you judge yourself, you're going to have to start controlling how you act and how you behave and so on, which, you know, we do it, but we don't do it as being the we do it by taking care of ourselves, and then all of a sudden we become these good people that other people like and become good examples to other people, become rich in our spirit and able to give to other people, able to listen to other people. Because we are rich ourselves, we're not needy, we're not afraid, we're not this, we're not that.
And I think also, too, not to be afraid of success, you know. Success, just as those people that have, can always give back and give more. So success is necessary in the world. So not to be, you know, as you say, you do the best you can with what you are given, and that's really what success is all about.
Absolutely. I mean, I thought a lot about this one. Does that mean I'm not ambitious? Does that mean I'm not going to give it my best? Absolutely not. You can do your best. And I say something in the book that I am invested in the process, but I'm not invested in the outcome.
Right.
In other words, I will do things, and I will work hard at them, and I will give my best in it. Like when I wrote this book, I put my heart into it and so on. But what happens with it after that is not up to me. And it doesn't matter what happens because I cannot predict what's going to be good and what's going to be bad. That's part of the humility of being part grounded and be part of something bigger. So I believe that we can be very ambitious, and I, of course we have to expand and we have to grow, but never, ever at the expense of being personally grounded. You don't, for example, sacrifice your health for that. You don't sacrifice your time with children for that. It is really quite ironic when somebody says, I sacrifice myself for my children. Because when you do that, you've sacrificed yourself even before you sacrifice your children simultaneously, because what children need is need you to be happy and fulfilled and having a positive outlook on life. They don't need you to just come in with a paycheck so you can buy them an extra bicycle and take them to the private school. That's not actually what's going to help them more. So if you take care of yourself and you got your basics covered, then by all means accomplish all you can accomplish after that. But once you accomplish it, take it away. Don't be invested and be hopeful that it's going to work out this way or that way or the other. And I think that's how you can achieve success and happiness.
And don't be selfish with your successes. Share them. Because when you share them, it's almost like planting seeds and having flowers. You cut down the flowers and you give them to other people, and then the seeds turn around and propagate again. So in other words, don't just believe you're in isolation. Really propagate the world with what you have, and it comes back.
Well, in the definition of success we're talking about is when you are rich as a person, you won't need to keep those successes. You're not doing it because you need them to feed your ego and to feed them. You, by definition, do not need them. You, by definition, just exude good things out. And that's what really brings you the greatest success in life, is when you're not actually going out and reaching, grabbing them for yourself. It's just people wanting to be around you. It's people wanting to ask you. It's people wanting to involve you in other things. And great success comes from that, much bigger than when we go out and try to grab it for ourselves. So, and that's when you become grateful automatically. It doesn't take work at that time to be grateful, when you are actually, you know, in a good place yourself.
Mm-hmm. Well, Charles, we're coming to the end of the show. It has been a great show. Can you please share with the listeners how to find out more information about you? That would be wonderful.
Sure. The book is called Higher. And if you go higherbook.com, you will find the website. It's actually being launched in 1 week. I have a lot of video clips where I talk about different questions in different areas of the book, about what is higher power, what is perception disorder, and things of that nature. My name, of course, is Charles Hanna, and you can also find it by charleshanna.com. It will take you to the same website. Higher is available in all bookstores, all the major bookstores. Just go in Charles Hanna Higher, and you'll find it on Google and all the reviews and stuff of that nature. So I'm hoping to see you guys. There's a subscription list keeping up, and I'm hoping to be interacting through blogs and discussions. So I really look forward to that interaction.
Well, Charles, it was such a pleasure to have you with us here today. As I've always said, you know, we don't ever plan the show. We don't script it. It just shows up. And it was a great conversation with you today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. It was my pleasure. It was amazing.
Thank you so much for being here. If you'd like to find out more information about Charles Hanna, again, his book is called Higher, Awaken to a More Fulfilling Life. Please do check out the website on the link on the bottom of today's show page. Thank you so much for joining us today. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and have a wonderful day.
Today we discussed many life-changing concepts. Who do you turn to, and how do you know what is best when faced with a health crisis? Dr. Jeanette is a patient advocate. She listens to the patient, the doctors, and the family, clarifies the health issues and concerns, then helps the patient make the best choices going forward. If you would like help implementing change into your life and health, we can talk and see where you are stuck and how to improve the quality of your life. Check the link on the bottom of today's show page or visit drjeanettegallagher.com to schedule a phone appointment today.